Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Text 11. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. You got that? Chapter 2, Text 11. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Ashochan.
Ashochan.
Anvashochaha.
Anvashochaha.
Tvam.
Tvam.
Pragya,
Pragya
Badan,
Badan
Cha,
cha
Bhashase Gata,
Gata
Asun,
Asun
Agata,
Agata
Asun,
Asun
Cha,
cha
Na,
na
Anushochanti,
Anushochanti,
Panditaha,
Panditaha,
Sri Bhagavanuvacha,
Sri Bhagavanuvacha,
Ashochan Anvashochastvam,
Ashochan Anvashochastvam,
Pragyavadamscha Bhashase,
Pragyavadamscha Bhashase,
Gatasun Agatasunscha, Nanushochanti Panditaha
Nanushochanti Panditaha
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha
Ashochananvashochastvam
Ashochananvashochastvam
Pragyavadamscha Bhashase
Pragyavadamscha Bhashase
Gatasunagatasunscha Nanushochanti Panditaha
Nanushochanti Panditaha
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said
Asochan
Asochan
Not worthy of lamentation
Not worthy of lamentation
Anvashochaha
Anvashochaha
You are lamenting
You are lamenting
Tvam
Tvam
You
You
Pragyavadan
Pragyavadan
Learned talks
Learned talks
Cha
Cha
Also
Also
Bhashase
Bhashase
Speaking
Speaking
Gata
Gata
Lost
Lost
Asun
Asun
Life.
Life.
Agata.
Agata.
Not past.
Not past.
Asun.
Asun.
Life.
Life.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Anushochanti.
Anushochanti.
Lament.
Lament.
Panditaha.
Panditaha.
The learned.
The learned.
Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, While speaking learned words, you are mourning for that what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Purport. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, You are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is body and what is soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology, but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the Supreme is even more important than religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless for the condition of the material body. Okay.
All right.
Om Jnanatmirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namasrishtam Manamapi Shakti Putram Atrasvarupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Pravto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atafpada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavascha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Rakunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamascha. Thus begins Krishna's instructions that are known as Bhagavad Gita. Actually, the Bhagavad Gita begins with Dhritarashtra Uvacha, Dhritarashtra speaking. That is the whole section of the Mahabharata which is called the Bhagavad Gita. But the literal words of Krishna, his instructions, which constitute the Bhagavad Gita, which constitute, yeah, Bhagavad Gita means the instructions of Krishna in the form of his speaking. That really begins here with this verse. And the rest is known as Bhagavad Gita by association because it's part of the part of the section. That's the first chapter. Krishna's not, there's no instruction of Krishna at all in the first chapter, but it's included in Bhagavad Gita because it sets the scene for Krishna speaking. And actually Krishna's instructions, his spiritual instructions, begin in the next verse, but in this verse, which we just read now, Krishna introduces or makes he creates the situation in which the spiritual knowledge is to be spoken by calling Arjuna a fool. Through Arjuna, Krishna is speaking to everyone who is intelligent enough to be able to hear all of this. So the first sign of intelligence is to understand that I don't know anything. That's the first sign. If one thinks one already knows everything, you can't learn anything. So intelligence begins with understanding that I'm a fool, and whatever opinions I may have formed, however noble they may seem, if I don't know the actual purpose of life, then I'm actually a fool. In the Mayavad traditions, they say that the, or Buddhist traditions, they say that the job of the, I was on a flight yesterday, let's put, from Delhi to London, then again London to Dublin. On the Delhi to London flight, an English Sikh woman was preaching to a young French Canadian. They were in the row with me. So I let her finish. I spoke to him later when she was asleep. She was asleep for a long time. Good. So they talked. It was interesting. They're using words like pure devotee. What, there was some other term they used, which taken from Prabhupada's books, actually. What was the other term they used? Spiritual master. So these terms are from Prabhupada's books. From Prabhupada's teaching. So even the Mayavadis have adopted all of this. So when he said, then they're talking about spiritual master, he said, yes, spiritual master is needed to destroy the ego. So they have that idea, to destroy the ego within. And then the idea is that you merge into the, you become one with God. So after I told them that better than becoming one with God is to love God and serve God eternally, which was a revelation for him, because he never heard that before. So he'd come to India and met so many Mayavadis, and they all said the same thing. So he was very happy to hear that, actually. So anyway, that point is generally understood. I'm just thinking, should I tell you or not? I think I'll tell you. I'll dissolve your, destroy your ego, is it? Many years ago, 1976, I was in ISKCON Vrindavan, in the fire sacrifice in which, for getting my second initiation, Brahminical initiation, when it was going on swaha, swaha, all the swahas were going, you know what that means? Putting the ghee in the fire. When Prabhupada leaned in the microphone and said, stop! And he indicated at the back, there was a woman with her child who was, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years old, and his Prabhupada said, this child has his hand in his mouth, he is contaminating the whole sacrifice, take him out, wash his hand, teach him not to put his hand in his mouth. Continue. So please, these are things which in Vedic culture, not nowadays, but at least up to one generation ago, children were taught in their infancy. So we're all in our spiritual infancy. Please go and wash your hand and come back again. And don't put your hand in your mouth again. Don't, and then you're opening the door with the right hand, which is contaminated. And when I say this, people think I'm crazy, but this is the culture which has come down for since time immemorial. It's all part of being clean, part of being Brahminical. Yeah, so talking about Brahminical initiation, that we had Kalyani Mataji after 17 years in the movement. I was Brahminically initiated, I think. But as I see it, apart from having tests and all this kind of thing, we should also teach all these things. Otherwise people are cooking for the deities and have no idea of even basic cleanliness. Dissolving the ego. Destroying the ego, that was the word they used. Horrible idea. It means like zapping you into non-existence, which is what the Mayavadis aim for. You have to be completely disgusted with material existence to actually want that. And the problem is that the Mayavadis, they're not completely disgusted with material existence. To have the determination to take so many austerities to over many lifetimes to become free from totally free from material attachments and be able to merge in the oneness. You have to be completely disgusted with material existence, but they're not, and therefore they go on enjoying it while talking about merging into the oneness. So the guru doesn't destroy the ego, purifies it, but destroys the false ego. So Krishna is doing that with Arjuna, first of all. Firstly, Arjuna must be thinking, well, it was a pretty good speech I made there. It's, you know, not fighting, and why should I be so greedy to take over, fight with these noble people, my respected seniors. Arjuna became a conscientious objector. All you people with English as a second or third language, do you know what that means? Conscientious objector. That means someone who doesn't participate in a war on moral grounds, because he thinks that fighting is bad, like the Quakers. what's the Quakers, the Friends or something they're called? Quakers, there's one Protestant sect called Quakers, because they used to shiver in ecstasy. Nowadays it's the Pentecostalists who do that. But anyway, they don't fight in wars. They let other people fight for them on the grounds of being conscientious objectors. That means they don't believe in war, and therefore they don't participate in wars. So Arjuna became a conscientious objector, which as Srila Prabhupada indirectly points out in this purport, is a higher consideration than this, the religious principle. Here, Srila Prabhupada states that Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology. Politics, or here's the Prabhupada's use of the word sociology, can be understood to mean social considerations. Arjuna didn't want to fight, considering that Bhishma, Drona, and other persons in the opposing armies who he would have to fight with the intention of killing, were respected seniors. So, for political reasons, there was a fight that Yudhishthira should take the throne, which had been denied to him. So Arjuna was obliged to fight for Yudhishthira, and the social consideration was that Arjuna was the political reason for the fight was Yudhishthira's wanting to regain the throne, and the social consideration by which Arjuna was there. Arjuna wasn't going to get the throne, Yudhishthira was going to get it. But the social consideration was that Arjuna was Krishna's, Yudhishthira's brother. So he was obliged to fight because of political and social obligations. But Arjuna brought forth religious principles. The religious principle Arjuna proposed was higher than the political or social consideration. The religious principle is that one should not attack with arrows to kill seniors. So that was one religious principle. And another religious principle regulating a social principle, which Arjuna brought forth various reasons for not to fight. Another reason is that if with the slaughter of all the Kshatriyas, which means the protectors of society, which was imminent in the battle, in the upcoming battle, then women would be unprotected and they would be taken advantage of, and the result would be adharma, adharma bhivavat Krishna. Pradushyanti Kulastriya. The high class women, of course nowadays you're not allowed to say high class, low class. It's egalitarianism, everyone's the same. And actually it's true, everyone is the same, everyone's lowest class. So that's egalitarianism. There is Jayate Varna Sankaraha. What Arjuna had predicted is that everyone just becomes the lowest class, because the Kula Dharma Sanatana, long-standing traditions, family traditions, become spoiled. Now, when we talk about family traditions, we don't mean like in the Western countries, going hunting, eating rotten pheasant, and things like that, but dharmic principles, Vedic principles, by which marriages were arranged very carefully, and the children were trained very carefully to uphold the religious principles. But Arjuna predicted that with the destruction of the dynasties, of the Kshatriya dynasties, the protectors of society, women would become polluted, and Varna Sankara, or unwanted offspring, or the kind of children that would be born would be those not with a good background in previous lives. The kind of soul that would get attracted to the or would take birth in the wombs of women who were having illicit sexual relationships would be the worst kind. And so in this way, Arjuna argued, the whole society would become polluted, and adharma, the opposite of religious principles, that would become prevalent in society, which actually happened after some time. So Arjuna was arguing from religious principles, which are higher than political or social considerations. But, as Srila Prabhupada continues, but he, Arjuna, did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the Supreme is even more important than religious formularies. So, dharma, which is a word that has also entered the Western lexicon, not just in English, maybe especially in English, but in other Western languages also. Probably mostly through Buddhism, which is unfortunate because the Buddhist understanding of dharma is Buddhist, not Vedic. But it's a difficult word to understand, even within followers of the Vedic culture. It's such a complex concept that even those who live within the Vedic culture and who are committed to dharma and live by dharma, even for them it's difficult to define it clearly, because it has multiple and nuanced meanings. It's something like mind. It's very difficult to define. Everyone, when you say mind, we all have an idea of what we're talking about. And even there are studies of the mind, but exactly to define it is very difficult. There are many words like that. Culture, exactly to define culture. So dharma, that is practically the... That is the principle of the whole Vedic culture. And especially in Mahabharata, in which this Bhagavad Gita in book form appears, Mahabharata is very much about dharma. The whole Mahabharata and the whole life of the Pandavas is very much dedicated to dharma. Dharma, which I can attempt to give some meaning. Of course, on the higher level, dharma means to surrender to Krishna, sarva dhamman parityaja mam ekam sharanam raja. Dharma can be defined, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma means the ordinances given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that constitutes the righteousness. It's often translated as righteousness. But it's more than righteousness. The whole understanding of the universal setup, the supreme being behind that, obligations, life after life. So the English word righteousness is quite insufficient to cover the whole gamut of meanings that the word dharma covers. So, dharma is the principle on which the battle was to be fought. Dharma is that for which kshatriyas live. That's what Arjuna is pointing out, that we're supposed to be protecting dharma, but the result will be that dharma will be, by the destruction of all the kshatriyas, the protection of dharma will completely cease in society. Of course, Arjuna didn't consider that by leaving the battle, and then if Arjuna, on philosophical or dharmic grounds, was to leave the battle, then if he was actually right, then everyone else should too, and Yudhishthira should too, and then Duryodhana would continue to rule. But his rule was adharmic, which was why the fight was going on in the first place. Yudhishthira was completely committed to dharma. He wouldn't have fought otherwise, but he was not able to execute his dharma as a kshatriya without having something to rule. And that's why he asked, at least give me a village, at least I can execute my dharma by as a kshatriya. If you give me at least one village to rule over. And Duryodhana famously said that he wouldn't give even that to him as much ground as you can push a pin into. He wouldn't give that much land. As he knew that if Yudhishthira was settled anywhere as a king, even of a village, then everyone would gravitate to him because he was so much more dharmic than Duryodhana. And even without Yudhishthira being ambitious for that, gradually everyone would go to him, and Duryodhana would be left as the king of nothing, no one to rule over. So for political reasons, Duryodhana didn't want to give Yudhishthira anything. So the battle was being fought on dharmic grounds, but Arjuna thought that a higher principle of dharma, because often principles of dharma, they conflict with each other. That is the nature of the world. It's a complex world. That's why even people who are not committed to dharma per se, but in the modern world we often see ethical questions arise, just like the question, for instance, the question of capital punishment. Although many people in the modern world they are opposed to capital punishment on principle. But then, so we're told, according to the news, the American government just authorized the actually illegal killing of Osama bin Laden, who, if anyone's listening to this class in a recording after 10 years, Osama bin Laden was a terrorist. After 10 years, probably no one ever heard of him. So, that's the way the world goes. He's supposed to be dead, we don't know. No body was seen. Suspicious. Actually illegal because, for various reasons, it was a unilateral action without the consent of the Pakistani government. It was done in Pakistan, and according to ideas of justice, they should have had a trial, but more or less everyone seems to be very happy, at least in the Western world. We don't hear about what the Muslim world says. Most probably in much of the Muslim world, the perception, the terrorists are the Americans and the British. They're the sub-terrorists. And the good guy is Osama and co. And you're laughing, but they're not laughing, because you read the newspapers here and they read the newspapers there. And that's why we should read Bhagavad Gita, because Pragyavadams Chabhashase. Arjuna thought he knew what he was talking about. But Krishna said, you don't know what you're talking about. You just read the newspapers. You don't know really what's going on. You just get the propaganda. So who was the demon? Who do I think is the demon? Osama bin Laden or Bush or Obama? They're all demons. There's one. Prabhupada gave the example of in the class, if two boys are causing, Prabhupada said when he was at school, if two boys are causing a disturbance, the teacher would make them stand up in front of the class and pull each other's ears. So he said these modern wars is like different demons. The demons, they're like that. They kill each other. And then who's the demon? So who's the bad guy? They're both bad guys. It's not Yudhishthira versus Duryodhana. It's demon versus demon. Prabhupada gave the example of Churchill on one side and Hitler on the other. They're both demons. Of course, on this side, because of modern history, Churchill said, I will be well judged by history because I will write it. But he was at least as much a demon as Hitler. Oh, wait a minute, they can't say that. He was a good guy. But actually Churchill caused a famine which killed probably as many, if not more people than were killed in the Holocaust. Plus the bombing of Dresden and all this. You know about that, the bombing of Dresden? Heard about that? You don't hear about it because you get taught in the British schools. But when the war was practically over, the Russians were coming through the eastern part of Germany and the British and American forces were coming from the west, and there was no hope for Germany. And militarily they were defeated. It was just a matter of reaching Berlin. So a city in eastern Germany, Dresden, Churchill had it firebombed and just completely burned the whole city with thousands of fleeing refugees from eastern Germany. The city was packed, probably maybe 300,000 people died. It had no military purpose whatsoever because Germany was already defeated. So up to now, no one really knows why they did it, but they did it. For days and nights, they just bombed the city. So anyway, I'm getting a little bit like Mahabharata. I'm going from one point to another point to another point. So capital punishment, yeah, that is considered wrong. But in some cases, some people may think, well, even people who are opposed to capital punishment, they might think that, well, for Saddam Hussein, who was not a demon, but he was demonized all the more, because he had to have some reason for invading that part of the world, and plenty of other leaders at least as bad as him, but you know, they had to have an excuse to invade Iraq, so he was the excuse. So maybe even people who are opposed to capital punishment, they're a little quiet when people they think are terrible demons like Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden are killed. Yeah, and under Obama there's all kinds of, you don't know, we don't know what's going on, you know. The CIA didn't go to sleep when Obama came in. So I made that, making this point that there, even in modern ethics there are conflicts, that in general we think that, well, there shouldn't be capital punishment, people should have fair trials before you punish them, but there's not been much protest against Osama bin Laden not having any fair trial and just being killed, and according to the reports he was unarmed at the time, because it's considered, well, better he's dead because he's plotting, so we're told, the death of so many people, so better kill him. So these kind of ethical dilemmas, dichotomies, contradictions, ethical sankata, what's the word? Ethical contradictions? Controversy, conundrum, none of these are exactly the right word, are they? Anyway, you know what I'm talking about, I hope. That's there in even if whatever ethical system you have, and in the consideration of dharma, that's also there. Because if you fight, then you're going to have to, if Arjuna is to fight, he's going to have to fight with Bhishma and Drona, who are his gurus and very loved persons. Bhishma, when the Pandavas were young boys, he was their grandfather and protected them, and Drona was their guru who trained them. Especially Arjuna was his very favorite disciple. Duryodhana was practically as affectionate at least to Arjuna as he was to his own son Ashwatthama. So you shouldn't fight, you should fight, because Duryodhana should be fought. But you shouldn't fight, because how can you attack Bhishma and Drona? And even Duryodhana, even though he's done wrong, he's a cousin. He's part of our own family. Maintaining the family is considered very important. Not destroying the family. So these considerations are there. But Krishna will point out that there are higher considerations still. Higher considerations than dharma are the consideration of knowledge of matter, soul, and the supreme, by which one's whole perspective on the world is different. If for people in the modern world in Britain, you call it Britain over here? Depends whether you're Catholic or Protestant, is it? This is Ireland, you call it Ireland, and that's Britain. Okay, so here in Ireland, well, actually that is Britain, but this is the United Kingdom, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The United Kingdom of Great,
Britain and Northern Ireland, and the Channel Islands. Yeah. Right? Channel Islands is neither in Britain, nor...
No, that's not in the UK.
Channel Islands is in the UK. It's not really, anyway... It's not in the title. It's too small to be in the title, and no one's trying to take it out either. Well, the French might, because it's closer to France than England. Anyway, that's not our consideration right now. What about the Isle of Man?
That's not in the UK, but it's kind of British overseas something.
The Isle of Man?
Yeah,
it's overseas in the sea. It's right in between. Anyway, I guess we needn't bother about that right now. So, dharma is a higher consideration than people in Ireland or Britain. There we are. There's a conciliatory term. Ireland or Britain can even think about. If people would come to the platform of dharma, that would be a good step up, right? Or even in India for that matter, because nowadays dharma, it's forgotten. But then from dharma to atmagyan, that's an even higher step, which is not they're not completely separate, because to the culture in which Atmagyan means knowledge of the self, in which that is cultivated, that goes on within the culture of dharma. And generally one has to follow, without following dharma, one cannot rise to the platform of considering knowledge of, as Srila Prabhupada says here, matter, soul, and the supreme. And even beyond that is the the conclusion or the of Atmagyan is bhakti, surrender to Krishna. So Arjuna was speaking on a high level, relatively high level. But Krishna chastised him. You know, you talk as if you know what you're talking about, as if you're a very learned person, but actually you don't know what you don't know actually what you're talking about, what you should be saying. Even before this, Krishna had chastised Arjuna. Kutas tva kasmilamidam vishame samupastitam. Yeah, so actually, you could say that's the beginning. First, Krishna chastised Arjuna, then Arjuna laments and mopes some more, and then Arjuna takes the position of a disciple, and then Krishna again, with this one verse, chastises Arjuna some more, and from the very beginning tells Arjuna very clearly that, Arjuna, what you've proposed is wrong. And then he goes on to explain why it's wrong. The reason Krishna gives, as we'll see in the following verses, the first reason he gives is that he speaks of the eternality of the soul, which Arjuna was already aware of. It's not that for Arjuna he was not aware of this. He was completely aware of this. The whole Vedic culture, people grow up with this awareness, knowing that I'm in my present situation because of what I did in previous lives, and my future situation will come about due to what I do in this life. So it's completely understood, and it's accepted as an axiom. It's not whether we are born again or not, that question doesn't arise. Of course, there may be some philosopher. Charvak was there who didn't accept that. Pasmi bhutasya dehasya kim puna agamano bhavet. Charvak says, well, when the body's finished, everything is finished. It's all just burned up, and we won't come back again. But Charvak is strongly rejected by the all mainstream Vedic pundits, or learned person, or the predominant stream in Vedic culture is acceptance of the principle of rebirth. So Arjuna already knew that, but Krishna here in Bhagavad Gita will explain that and bring it to Arjuna's attention, because knowing it is not simply knowing that we are not the body. We're eternal spirit soul, or the body is temporary. That simply to know it in a vague or theoretical way isn't enough to bring us to the platform of acting a spirit soul, because we tend to become very attached to the body, and that's the nature of Maya, that we think that this life is all in all. So we may know theoretically, we may pass our Bhakti Shastri exam and get good marks and all that kind of thing, but it doesn't mean that we're actually fixed in spiritual knowledge, or that we're acting on the spiritual platform. A Bhakti Shastri degree, you can wave it. When you die, you can say, I passed my Bhakti Shastri, and there's no guarantee you're going to get to the spiritual world. It, in and of itself, it doesn't help one, but it's the practical realization and application in life by which one has to go on hearing all these points. And what is the application of that? To know that this life is temporary, and now you get life after life. For many people in the Vedic culture, as Krishna will point out, they take that knowledge to think that, okay, well, let me act piously in this life, and I'll enjoy myself in the next life. And that's what most people in the Vedic culture do, as we understand, at least at that time, when Krishna was speaking that. And that's still going on. Most of what goes on in Hinduism, as so-called Hinduism, is people, they are praying for removal of obstacles to their enjoyment and getting facilities for enjoyment, mostly in this life. They don't think so much of the next life. So, Krishna is pointing out to Arjuna that although what you say might sound, it definitely sounds right to you, you sound pretty convinced, but you don't know what you're talking about. We have to hear from Krishna. Krishna will give us the actual situation. So that was true for Arjuna. That is true for everyone else. Arjuna, he might have got a medal from the Quakers Society or the Conscientious Objectors, but Krishna said, "You're just a damn fool." And Prabhupada used those very terms. That damn fool. That was one of Prabhupada's commonly used terms. So, although Arjuna might have been praised by other damn fools, that didn't change the situation. He was a damn fool. And that his way of thinking, although it might be praised by others as being very noble, was actually of no real benefit to him or anyone else, although it might have seemed to by other foolish people. And that is actually the nature of the world, of this material world, that even people who think that they want to do good for others, or even people who think that they are doing good for others and others praise them as doing good for others, because they don't know what actual good is, their so-called doing good is actually harmful. We see people are highly praised in this world. Just I often give these two examples of Mother Teresa and the Dalai Lama, who people think are great saintly persons, but what actual good have they done for the world? Mother Teresa, they're both meat eaters. This hypocrite Dalai Lama goes all over the world talking about peace, and every day stuffs himself, he's a glutton, with lots of meat. And Mother Teresa also, I mean, I lived in Calcutta for some time, no one ever heard of her. It's not like she's supposedly helping some poor people, there's so many poor people. And her big thing was getting people who lived on the street all their life, taking them off the street when they're seeing people dying and put them in her home when they're about to die, feed them some meat, and if they recover, well, they can get back out on the street again. So what actual help is there? But she got by propaganda, she was advertised as a great person, although she never took any interest in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although she was living in the land of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So people who are foolish, which means most people in the world, almost everyone, because they don't know the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, they think, oh, very good, you see, Dalai Lama, he smiles so nicely and he talks about peace. But what's his actual contribution? He is contributing to the whole ethos of bad karma and personally giving much non-peace to the various animals that he consumes every day. So they don't know what they're talking about. They're talking about peace and love and goodness and kindness, and at the same time inflicting violence on others and being praised as great saintly persons by other foolish people. So, just giving this example to drive home the point, to underline that we should listen to Krishna, what Krishna says, and not listen to others who may seem very good. There are so many people who seem to be very good and who talk of peace and love and merging with the oneness, Om Shanti and all this kind of thing. But they're all damn fools and rascals because they don't like to listen to Krishna. Arjuna, he was a fool, at least according to Krishna, We shouldn't say that, but at least he was put into Maya by the arrangement of Krishna's energy so Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. So practically he was a fool, like Hiranyakashipu was a demon, although he's actually an associate of the Lord, the gatekeeper of Vaikuntha. So Arjuna was a fool because he thought he knew what was good. He had a noble, apparently noble intention, but he was not acting on the platform of spiritual knowledge, and therefore all his noble intentions, they were ultimately not at all good for humans, either for himself or for anyone else. So we should be very careful of so-called goodness and good intentions and people who are nice and good if they don't have actual spiritual knowledge. Because if they don't have actual spiritual knowledge, their sentiment of doing good, first of all, it's hypocritical. Because it's not on the platform of surrendering to Krishna. And it's not really the desire to be good. Because if people really want to be good, then they will want to know what is the highest goal of life. They will want to accept that they are subordinate to the Supreme Controller and will want to know who He is, how to surrender to Him. They will not be trying to do good simply on the mundane bodily platform or even on the superficial spiritual platform, like all this merging into one and all, which is another feature of envy of Krishna, a horrible idea of destroying the ego, which means zapping yourself into non-existence. A horrible idea. Just become nothing and then and stop this suffering of the material world, and at the same time avoid surrendering to Krishna. That's what it means. We're here in this material world, we're suffering this material world because we don't surrender to Krishna. And we want to get free from that suffering and still not surrender to Krishna. We'll not surrender to Krishna, but we won't get the result of not surrendering to Krishna by merging into someone. I'll become nothing, but I won't surrender to Krishna. I'll give up all prospect of any happiness in this material world, but I won't surrender to Krishna. Determine non-surrender to Krishna. So it's actually a completely horrible idea, but people talk of peace, love, merging, shanti, spiritual vibrations, and all this kind of thing. But they're foolish, because they don't know the actual position of surrender to Krishna. So we should hear from Krishna and his representatives. It may sound, it definitely will sound shocking, because in this material world we have a whole construct of so-called goodness and niceness and what is proper and what is right without surrender to Krishna. But whatever seems good and proper and nice and right without surrender to Krishna cannot possibly be proper or good or right or nice. It all simply leads to repeated birth and death. It's all inauspicious for the world. So, yes, we should hear from Krishna and follow what Krishna says. And that way we will be saved from our own foolishness, and if we actually want to do good for others, and then we have to give them Krishna consciousness, because nothing else can actually help one. Everything else is just a show of help or a useless kind of help. Just like, as we've heard, that when in Nazi Germany and Poland, Nazi ruled Poland, that in the death camps, when they're taking out groups of people, marching them to the gas chambers, I think it was in Auschwitz or one of the camps, one of the camp governors had an orchestra playing classical music as they marched to the camp. And some of them, this before they got stripped off in the gas chambers, some of them would tip their hats. You know what that means, tip their hat? That used to be, take off your hat and then put it back again as a sign of appreciation. So you can say, well, that's very good. Very nice music for them. But they're being taken to the gas chamber. So the idea of doing good in this material world without Krishna consciousness is like entertaining people on the way to the gas chamber. It's bizarre. It's meaningless and bizarre. So we're not saying that there shouldn't be material bodily good, but without Krishna consciousness, it really doesn't serve any purpose. And it distracts us from the real purpose of life, just like the people I think, oh, very nice music. The fact that they didn't know that they're about to be killed. So if they knew, they might forget about the orchestra and try and run away or something, and there's nothing much they could do. But the very idea that we'll make this material world nice and we'll do good for others without surrender to Krishna, it bolsters the illusion that this material world can be nice. So in that sense, it actually works against the principle of Krishna consciousness, and it's more harmful than not doing good. Spiritually also, and people say that it's merging into the oneness. It's people say, oh, sounds very good, peace, love, and light, and niceness, and joy. But no, it all sounds very nice, but there's no Krishna. So it's all based on envy of Krishna. So we should hear from Krishna. Don't hear from anyone else. Hear from Krishna and those who are representing Krishna. That is what Arjuna will do, and we should do also. Any question about this, please? Question, comment, protest? Any Mother Teresa fans here, Dalai Lama fans? You hear a lot about Dalai Lama. It is not much publicized that he's a meat eater and a glutton at that. It's not that he eats a little meat, he eats a lot. He has a good digestion. Yeah?
Perhaps can you explain when Krishna says that the learned person doesn't lament for the living or the dead? But isn't it lamentable that someone like you well, a person could think it's lamentable that someone is remaining within the cycle of birth and death.
Krishna says a learned person doesn't lament for the living or the dead. That means he doesn't lament for the body or the bodily identification. Certainly repeated birth and death is lamentable, as Krishna will point out in Bhagavad Gita. But one doesn't lament for that bodily identity. If one conceives of it, this person is my friend. My friend has died. I am lamenting. That is Maya. But for that to lament, because that person, actually that person is not really a person, it's persona. You know this word persona? It literally means a mask. I mean, it's derived from Greek or something. It means what we think of as the person is the mask or the personality, the false personality that we accept. It's not actually the person. You can live with a person your whole life and you may know them very well, but you don't actually know them, because you know them according to the identity that they and everyone else think they are, but that's not really them. We don't really know anyone in this material world, because we're all mad ourselves, and everyone else is mad. and we don't know who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it, what we should be doing. It's just, you know, a bunch of crazy people, except those who are devotees of Krishna. Hare Krishna. The end.